Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
All about safe environment. That is the first thing we want for you, because what we know to be true is that when you've been through something like this, nothing feels safe. You can't even go to the grocery store and wonder and not wonder who else might know. Who else knows this dirty little secret? Well, the truth of the matter is that I want you to know that there are some things that you can do to feel safer. As a matter of fact, I just pre-recorded a show last night. It's going to be fabulous. It is a listener who had nothing but partner questions. And she started asking me all these questions on an email, and I said, I am happy to answer these, but why don't you come on the show so that we could talk about it together? Because what I believe is that when somebody has a question, there are at least 100 women out there that have the same question. So she was ever so kind to agree, and other than a little glitch at the very beginning, because she and I had some sort of contact problem, I could hear her, she couldn't hear me, so she had to call back twice. But after that, it was rock and roll. We did just fine, and she asked some incredible questions. And she asked the questions that almost every one of my clients asked. So I thought, you know, if you have not had the ability or availability to find an AppSats coach or clinician and get some of these questions answered, I guarantee you, whether it's a coach or a clinician, the kinds of questions she was asking, we have been trained at AppSats to answer. That's the good news. Now, I also know that this is so overwhelming and your brain can't function and you deserve to have extra support. And when I say extra support, I mean, you know, when you're sick and maybe you're going to the doctor or maybe you've had to go to the hospital, and the advice is always get a second pair of eyes and ears to be in that room with you while you get your cancer diagnosis. Because really, that is so traumatic that you really need a second person to also pay attention to what the doctor is saying so that they can help you process it. You want to know why? Because they're in trauma brain. And when somebody's in trauma brain, it's super important to be able to hear information perhaps one, two, or three times in a very slow and soft manner. That's why in the Help Her Heal book, I'm always telling him, look her in the eye, go slow, speak softly, speak quietly, you know. And then to have that second pair of ears and eyes really helps you to process the information, especially, again, because you're in trauma brain. Okay, knowing that, this woman was asking questions for you, and that'll be next week, so, because I am out of town. And so I'm super excited. I'm going to do my best to get one of my Help Her Heal books to Glennon Doyle. And Glennon Doyle is an author who has written now a couple of books, but her first book was about her own emotional problems. She was not very healthy. She had a lot of mental health issues, and she wrote the book Love Warrior. And as I'm reading it, it was recommended to me by a very close friend. My close friend did not tell me it was a story, a memoir, if you will, of her husband's sex addiction. Now, the truth of the matter is that they are very good friends now. They're divorced. When you read the first book, you think they're going to make it. And then, ultimately, there is a big cliffhanger, and they don't make it. And then she actually falls in love with a woman. And I remember one of my partners she emailed me at Christmas. She loved that book. And this is a devout Christian woman. And she loved the book. And she felt so betrayed because she's like, how can I believe anything in that book was true when she was a lesbian? But the thing is, she didn't know she was a lesbian. And I believe there are people that are bisexual. Now, I hope this isn't too controversial for you, but my belief is on a scale and a continuum of sexuality, you got homosexuals, you got bisexuals, and then you got heterosexuals. And I have no doubt that Glennon thought she was a heterosexual until she got divorced. And in her second book, she says, I had no idea that I had these feelings. Now, psychologically, one might say, perhaps she was so betrayed that the thought of being with another male was too painful. Actually, that's what my client said. But I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that. I am just going to say that I want her to read my book, and she's in Naples, and that's where I'm going to be. And I'm going to find her, and I'm going to leave it in her mailbox and hope I don't get arrested for stalking her. Because I want her to read this. I think she'll really appreciate it, even though it does not seem like she is bitter any longer. It doesn't seem like, it seems like she got over the betrayal. She understood where his wounds were. He got healthy, and she forgave him. Now, sometimes partners forgive, and sometimes they don't. And that is 100% your choice. I don't know. Today, do you think that you could forgive? Is that a possibility? I would hope so. But here's what I know. We tell our partners that forgiveness is for them. And so when I say I would hope so, it's not for him, it's for you. And I would love you to have that in your heart. But if this is an unforgivable thing and you can't, that's okay too. Because you can only do what you can do. and I know that. And so no pressure here. We at APSATS put no pressure on you. We take it slow. We allow you to have the self-determination to know what you need best. We're just here to support you. It is a good book, though. Love Warrior. She's been on Oprah. She's been on about every podcast imaginable. Maybe I can even get her on mine. See, I know that when I talk about homosexuality, that could be offensive to some people. And so in no way am I wanting to offend you. But I just really believe that there are some people that were born that way. Some people that made the decision to go that way. Those are two separate origins. And she seems really happy now. We'll have to wait and see. I wish I could think of the second book real quick because I'm in the midst of reading it. And her chapters are like 8 pages long. So they are easy to get in and out of. All right. Now, today I have a guest that I think you're really going to appreciate. She has written a guide for couples called The Trust Solution. And she wants to help couples and individuals restore trust. And so this guide is actually called The Truth Solution, a couple's guide for healing your intimate partner's betrayal. And so Dr. Mary Franz is a psychotherapist in private practice in New York City. And I have watched some of her responses on the listserv that I'm on. It's not the APSATS listserv, it's the iPad listserv. And I really liked her, and I reached out to that group and said, hey, I'm looking for podcasters. Anybody want to be on my podcast? And she answered. And you know, she took it so seriously. And she really goes into great detail about why she wrote the book. She really believes that intimate partner betrayal is very difficult to get over and that you need a guide to help you through that. And she works with both partners individually and as a couple. So I'll be excited to hear what she has to say. Now, let's see here. What's exciting in my life? Well, I finally finished it. You know, I thought I finished it a month ago. And then I get back edits on my edits, and then I'd edit over those edits, and then they'd over. It's like giving birth to a child when you write a book. And I hope that it's as popular as Help Her Heal because it is specifically for the partner. And one of the things I know is that people love Help Her Heal because it's written for the addict, but it is an advocacy workbook for you, the partner. And so I oftentimes have my couples read the book together. It's being used in couples groups and sex addict groups, and so it can be used in a variety of ways because it's somewhat psychoeducational. My clients, when they read it, they're like, oh my gosh, Carol, this isn't a book. This is being in therapy with you for 20 weeks. Because I write like I speak. I think you probably know that by now. If you've read the book and you've heard me on the podcast, you get it. And I absolutely understand that I do narratives. I can't help myself. I have to write like I speak, and I speak in therapy speak. So that's what this new book is. It's called Unleashing Your Power, Moving Beyond Partner Betrayal. And so it's how you get healthy, and you know that's my mission. To help partners get healthy. And I would believe that Dr. Mary Franz also has that same goal. You know, the name of the show today is The Essentials for Relationship Repair. And the essentials are real, you know, that's my new favorite word. It came out of COVID. You know, looking at the essentials. What do we need? What are the basics? And so today, Dr. Mary is going to be talking about the book she wrote and what she believes is the best way to approach intimate partner betrayal. So I want to welcome her to the show. Dr. Mary Franz, thank you for coming on today.
Hi, Carol. Thanks very much for having me.
Yes, you are multi-talented. You have an ASECT certification, which for our listening audience, that's the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. I mean, so she can help with sex therapy in general, not necessarily sex addiction, but sex therapy in general. And then she has also gotten her CSAT, so she can help with sex addiction. She is a certified sexual addiction therapist. And then I love that you have studied with some of the greats like I have. I mean, you are doing Imago therapy. You've studied with Gottman. You're doing EMDR and cognitive behavioral therapy. You are just a lifelong learner, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I find this day and age it's good to be integrative, and there's so many good therapies and modalities out there that they all really help when you have this toolbox of different strategies.
Well, and you know, that's what I see the truth solution, the couple's guide for healing from intimate partner betrayal. That's what I see that being, is it's a toolbox for couples to help them to work through their relationship. So why did you write the book?
Well, the book came out of my experience working with couples. I really felt that there was something needed for the couples once they got to the point where they wanted to repair their relationship. And they both were clear on that intention. And there was a lot of resources out there for the healing partner and for the person that was hurt. But there wasn't a real clear guide for them to come together. And they didn't know quite like how to fit together in that process. So sometimes, one of them would start individual therapy, or I'd be working with the couple trying to repair their relationship, but they really needed more specific guidance. So I wanted this to be a treatment protocol that they could follow to help them learn how to work together in that repair process.
Well, I know, and you typically get clients that either come to you because of your own reputation, or sometimes they're seen individually and they need some couples work, and so you make it your own by helping them work through the couple's work. Would you not agree?
Right. Well, yeah. Lots of times that I start from a different place where I'll start with a partner who will come because she's discovered a betrayal, or I'll start someone who's struggling with sex addiction who's in the process of healing. But eventually it comes around when they want to repair their relationship to working together. Lots of times I'll have couples refer to me from the therapist for one of the partners, and that's where I really found the challenge to be, is how to help them work together at this point. It seemed like they were a little bit lost once they got to the stage of working together. I know your book, Help Her Heal, addresses this issue, and Stephanie Carnes mm-hmm. came out with a book in the spring, Courageous Couples, and that also provides advice for couples. But there wasn't much else other than those two books. So I thought having a book with specific instructions and a specific protocol where they could kind of stay in sync with each other, they knew what to expect, and that gave some specific tools for each part of the journey that they'd be taking together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's first talk. I mean, most of our listeners are betrayed partners, but what do you consider to be intimate partner betrayal? Because you talk a lot about that in the book.
It's when there's a violation of trust in a relationship with certain implicit expectations and agreements, and where one partner violates that trust with deceitful behaviors where they're keeping secrets from the other partner. And it can involve a sexual, most of the times it involves a sexual situation on the situations I focus on in this book. Although there can be betrayals, you know, financial or health betrayals, but that's not what I'm focused on here. I'm focused on the kind of betrayals where somebody goes outside of the relationship and is involved sexually in an affair, an emotional affair, or excessive pornography use. And the main component is that the trust is broken. I think the partners, what they all say is what hurts them the most is the lying and the deceit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you've already alluded to it, but there are different kinds of betrayal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
the financial betrayals or health betrayals or family betrayals, those kinds of betrayals are not the ones that I'm focused on. The kinds of betrayals I'm focused on are where somebody is having an affair or they're involved with one person outside the relationship, or they can be involved with using escort services. They can be having acting out behavior where they're going to strip clubs and having all kinds of other sexual involvements outside of their sexual relationship with their partner. It can involve pornography, where the pornography has gotten to such an extent that one of the partners is relying on the pornography for emotional regulation, and where they start focusing more on that and shutting their partner out, and they become less and less available and more withdrawn.
Well, I know, and that is really when it becomes compulsive, problematic sexual behavior. And so I'm glad that you broke that down in that way, because obviously, the key to any kind of betrayal is secrecy, deception, gaslighting, lying, all of the stuff that typically happens when somebody's hiding and betraying their partner. Now, I want to ask you, how do you believe intimate partner betrayal happens, and why?
Well, I think there's so many reasons why an individual starts going down that road. And I think that you have to look at the cases individually. But there are common situations that we see a lot of. And that's where there's a situation where we term it sex addiction or out of control sexual behavior or love addiction. And that's often where someone develops a pattern, a coping pattern to deal with their problems, their difficult emotions, and life's difficulties, where they self-medicate that emotional discomfort by going to sexual behaviors as a way to self-soothe or distract themselves or regulate themselves. And when they start using that, and they find that it helps take them away from these emotions, it becomes more and more, they become more dependent on that behavior because they see that works for them. But it also puts them into a cycle because they feel shame afterward, and then they have to regulate that emotion of shame. So it becomes a negative behavior pattern in their life. And oftentimes it will involve attempts to stop and rationalizations and denial will kick in, where they'll say, oh, if my partner doesn't know about it, or if they found out, they'd be devastated, so I can't let them know about it, or I work really hard and I deserve to have some things that I enjoy. My partner doesn't have to know every detail of my life. And sometimes it's just a single incident where somebody can cross a line where maybe they're drinking too much or out with some friends and they get in a situation and they cross a line and they can't get back over it. And before they know it, they're involved in a relationship that they never thought would happen to them. And that's when they really don't have a good awareness of where the boundaries need to stay in their relationship. There's something that I call seemingly unimportant decisions. And that's where somebody will make a choice and they don't understand the ramifications of that choice. So those are things that in the healing process, the partners need to be really clear on. Where do the boundaries need to be around our relationship and with others outside of our relationship?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you touched on what happens with compulsive problematic sexual behavior. And that is that after it becomes habitual, it is so embedded in the brain that the addict can't stop. And they tell themselves they're going to stop. They promise themselves they're going to stop. And they actually can't. And so that's, again, where they use all those rationalizations and minimizations to legitimize what they absolutely know is wrong. I mean, I've never met an addict who didn't say, I knew what I was doing is wrong. So I'm going to ask you, how do you believe this affects a couple's relationship? I mean, how does it break down the trust? Do you feel that it happens before the discovery, or is trust broken after discovery?
Well, I think after discovery is when the trust is absolutely broken. But, you know, things can be going on before there's a discovery. The one partner can just feel that there's something wrong. They feel their partner withdraw. They can feel more conflicts coming up. Their sexual relationship can change. They just feel that something's off, but they don't know what it is. And when they try to talk about it, it doesn't get anywhere. And when those things happen, sometimes they'll try couples therapy. But if one partner has this secret life where they're engaging in these behaviors and they're not ready to come clean, then in the couples therapy, there can be all kinds of rationalizations, and it can be, oh, there's these problems in our relationship, or I'm depressed, or whatever. But the real thing that's at the heart of the relationship causing the problem doesn't really change. I mean, they can put a Band-Aid on the problem where they might not have fights or arguments as much, and things can change on the surface, but it doesn't change the essential dynamic. Sometimes the partner can have no idea that there's a problem, because sex addiction thrives in secrecy, and sometimes they can have two different sides to their personality where they try really hard to be people pleasing and make everything okay on the surface. And then they have another part where they act out in secret, and the partner might not know that really anything is wrong. And other times, the trust can be eroded by lots of things that just don't add up, where the partner starts not being accountable, or they start breaking their word or not keeping agreements. And that's where the trust can start to be damaged in the relationship. It can start all those different ways. But one thing that doesn't usually happen is, one, the partner doesn't usually voluntarily reveal the situation. It usually comes with a discovery of some evidence that the partner that's being hurt crossed an email or something else that really indicates that a betrayal is happening, and that's like when the final blow happens to the trust between the couple.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you and I both know that partners then, once they've got some evidence, they become very skilled at figuring out what is happening to them. And when they do that, they are then, they're absolutely, they're Columbo in that they figure out and try to put all the pieces together. Now, mm-hmm. I said Columbo, but we really do know that that out-of-control sexual behavior is life-threatening to a partner, and she's going to do whatever she can to know the truth. And that's it. We mm-hmm. were, you're on the AFSAT show, which is the Association for Partner-Sensitive Trauma Therapists, and we really believe that she does know, does need to know the truth, and so I'm so glad that your book and you both endorse the need for disclosure. So we'll just talk about that briefly in a little bit. But you just described partners kind of having that intuition that, hey, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. He's denying it. Something's wrong. Or maybe they don't know at all. And so this comes as such a trauma response when they get that information. What do you see as being the effects on a betrayed partner? How do they wear this betrayal? How does it affect them?
Well, they become very confused and they feel unsafe. They have a reality fragmentation because they don't know what's true and what's not true about their life. They feel a lot of self-blame. They think, why is this happening? Did I do something? They become hypervigilant, where they have to pay attention to every little thing. And they feel, like you said, that they have to put this puzzle together. And they feel a lot mm-hmm. of emotional instability and very isolated and alone. So one of the things that's really important is for them to get support. And it's not such a good idea to confide in friends or people that are probably going to have a permanent place in your life because you don't know how this is going to play out. It's more important to get support from a professional who could have a support group that you could join where they understand the situation, they're an objective third party, they can help sort through all the confusing perceptions that the partner's having. They can help them determine the steps that they can take to help clarify the situation a little more. Like they can, the partner can make requests, and if the their mate doesn't answer the requests or refuses to, well, that's not such a good sign. It shows that there's a lack of mutuality in the relationship. They might have to start setting more boundaries to take care of themselves. And that might mean they might have to have some physical separation if the partner doesn't answer their requests. At a certain point, they might have to have some non-negotiable requests. If certain things are happening in the relationship where they say that they can't live with certain behaviors and that they really need their partner to make an agreement to deal with those behaviors.
Absolutely. And so you and I both believe that when they are really looking at what are their needs, that you're looking at it from a safety issue, an emotional issue, a psychological mm-hmm. issue. And so can you tell our listening audience, who are mostly partners, what do you mm-hmm. advise for grounding and resourcing and self-soothing? You've already talked mm-hmm. about the group, how important that can be.
Mm-hmm. So I think the three things, like you said, are safety, support, and soothing. So the support we talked about, which is, you know, having a professional and a group that can provide you with assistance, advice, and validation for your feelings. The safety is from being continually blindsided and hurt. So that can involve in home safety, where if you're trying to discuss something with the partner and it turns into an angry confrontation, and that can feel very unsafe. So you might have to determine some rules for how you're going to deal with conflicts in the home and boundaries around that. And soothing, there's many different techniques that the partners can use to help themselves soothe. In my book, I talk a lot about a lot of them. Some of them are fairly common, like meditation or mindfulness practice, breathing exercises when you're upset to focus on your breath, naming your emotions that makes them more concrete, where if you identify I'm disappointed or I'm confused, it can help you figure out, well, what is the next step that I need to take? It makes it more concrete. Affirmations where you self-talk when you start to feel powerless or hopeless. Think of things that you're grateful for, or giving yourself a message, I'm not going to give up. There will be a solution to this problem, and I've solved many problems and challenges in my life before, and I know I can solve this. Becoming aware of triggers and trying to limit those types of situations that you're aware of that are going to be really difficult to handle. There's a whole list in my book of all these different coping strategies, and finding to be able to get in a state where you can have more emotional regulation will really help in dealing with the emotional aspects, because it's hard to for your cognitive brain to operate effectively when you're feeling really emotional. So being able to give yourself time to calm down and to process what you need to process will be the best way to make the decisions that you need to make.
And, you know, I don't know what you think, but I know that many of the partners, although they're thinking mindfulness and they're thinking yoga, they're also mad that they have to do all this extra work. And and they go, I don't want anyone to do it. But the truth of the matter is they really do need to do it to put their brain back online. Wouldn't you agree?
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly what it is. And it's not, if they could see it as not work for the other person, but these are for them to gain skills. They're just gaining more and better skills that will help them in any area of their life to be able to regulate those emotions and to be able to sometimes we need to compartmentalize them. You know, it's good to be able to feel our emotions because they give us lots of information. We can view them as a wave, that they're temporary. They're going to wash over us and we just have to ride that wave. But sometimes we need to just kind of contain them because in that moment they're going to interfere with something that we really need to focus on. There's another exercise called the container exercise where you visualize a container and you visualize putting those difficult emotions in the container that has a lid on it that you can contain them, and then you can bring them to your therapy group or to your therapist and bring them out and look at them and learn what information is there that I really need to take and form some choices and decisions from that information.
Mm-hmm. Because all of these things are important for a partner to do, and in terms of working towards repair of herself and repair of the relationship. Wouldn't you agree? Mary? I'm checking on you. Mary? I think we lost Mary. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and hopefully she's going to call back because she did such a nice job of sending me information. Are you there, Mary?
Can you hear me?
Okay, well,
Well, that is a shame. I just disconnected her, so she called back. So she's going to call back in 1 second, and I'm going to tell you that more often than not, a partner does want to work on building the relationship back up, but she doesn't feel safe. And when she doesn't feel safe, Dr. Mary is going to talk about what she can do to repair the relationship. So, Dr. Mary, tell me, do you believe it's possible for a partner to repair a relationship?
Hi, Carol. I'm sorry we got disconnected. Yes, but I think what's most important is for the hurt partner to they have to look at certain requirements and needs for the willingness from the healing partner, from their mate. And they have to see that they're willing to meet them at a certain point, which is they need to have some initial agreements for the repair condition. What I call the healing partner, that's the betrayer, he needs to understand that there's certain non-negotiable agreements, and he has to be willing to meet those. They have to be willing to provide the information that the hurt partner needs in order to heal. They don't know what they're agreeing to healing, unless they know the details of what happened. And it's a demonstration of the commitment to healing the relationship for the healing partner to be willing to reveal that information, even though it's difficult and they may feel humiliated or shamed. But it shows in the hurt partner that they're willing to do whatever it takes to heal. And those conditions really have to be present. It's really important for the hurt partner to be able to evaluate if the healing partner is willing to meet them halfway. Because if they're not, then the prognosis for healing isn't good. The partner that did the betrayal really needs to take responsibility and accountability, or there's nowhere to go until that happens.
Well, you're exactly right. And they need to show that remorse, and they need to go through some processes. So will you talk about the three processes that really help build or restore trust?
Well, I think the process is there's a protocol that I've developed for partners to go through when they're trying to restore trust. And it involves 6 steps. And in order to start the process, the healing partner needs to build a bridge with their partner, who might not be able to join them in that healing process right away. They need time to adjust to the hurt and process all the feelings of what happened to them. And that might take them a while. But the healing partner can start by stating their intention that they want to heal the relationship, by taking a responsibility and being accountable, by showing remorse, being willing to listen to their partner's feelings with empathy and compassion, and demonstrating their commitment to meeting their partner's needs for repair. So I can go through these 6 steps in the repair process. Would you like me to go through what those 6 steps are?
Well, I really would. And now, these 6 steps, do they occur before or after the disclosure, the emotional impact letter, and the restitution letter?
Okay, so the emotional impact letter and the restitution letter, those are two devices. You know, Stephanie goes into detail about them in her book, and I think you maybe cover them in your book. And where they fit into this process, I think there's some flexibility here. I see it as the first step is the accountability, where it has to be totally clear that the betraying partner is willing to be accountable. And and they could use the emotional restitution letter at that point and state what their intention is, take responsibility for their behaviors, to state to their partner how they understand it impacted them and how it could have hurt them. And they're taking that step where they need to be proactive to get this process started. So even though their partner might not be willing to join them yet, that's how they can start taking the process, to start the process. Now, the disclosure would be the next step, number two, is where the betrayer needs to come clean. They need to give their partner the information that they need to heal. And the healing partner needs to agree to the non-negotiable behaviors, which could be no contact with an affair partner or stopping use of the pornography, whatever it is that is really the most painful thing to the hurt partner. So when they come clean, the best way to do that is with the disclosure process, because it's more controlled and it's more thorough. And the last thing that you want is the disclosure to be staggered, where it comes out in dribs and drabs, what some people call as slow death by paper cut, because it's just this ongoing pain and the hurt partner just keeps becoming blindsided. So it's really important to do a formal disclosure where the therapists are involved, that it's planned for, that the partner is prepared, the hurt partner can give their partner a list of the questions that they need answered, and the healing partner provides the dates, the acting out behavior, the ways that they lied or tried to cover up, and it's a way of validating what the hurt partner has felt and the healing partner taking responsibility. It's very painful and very difficult, but also very necessary, and it kind of draws a line in the sand. And this is the part where the real change happens. So the emotional impact letter, that can come at any time, you know, during these early steps. Lots of times therapists will encourage the hurt partner to do that after they've heard the disclosure, where they know exactly what they're dealing with. But at any point during those first three steps, I think that those tools can be used. The next tool is agreements. And I think agreements is really important, because what caused the breakage of the trust was either agreements that weren't clear or they were just implicit. But in order to heal, those agreements need to be really agreed on and understood between the couple in a way that's really clear. And there's tools to help with defining those agreements, like the three circles tool, and that is in my book. It explains exactly how that's done, and that's also in the Stephanie's book and the Karn's book. It's a very common tool that's used, where there's behaviors that are totally unacceptable, there's other ones that lead to the unacceptable behaviors, and there's behaviors that you want to encourage. They're healing behaviors, and you want to do more of those. So having a real concrete and clear agreement is the next step. It's like a platform to build the rest of the repair on. And then transparency, there needs to be ongoing transparency. The disclosure is the start of the transparency, where it kind of draws a line in the sand with what is true and what's not been true. But in order to heal and establish the trust, the hurt partner needs a way to verify what the behaviors are, that words have lost their meaning. And so the healing partner has to be willing to do things and understand the need for a demonstration of that transparency. And that can be by exchanging passwords or giving the partner access to your phone, where they can look and see the text messages or have a GPS tracking device. It's whatever the individual couple needs that will help them feel more connected and secure about the transparency. And then there's one more step to the process. Would you like me to explain the last step now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And that's to really work on their communication and their conflict repair skills. Because throughout this process, there's times when the emotions are going to become dysregulated. There's still a lot of pain. And having, for the couple to have an agreement and a way to handle the conflict is really important. What I suggest is there's a tool called the dialogue tool that I think is so effective for any kind of serious conflicts. And that's where the concerns are separated. You take one person's concern at a time. It doesn't become a back and forth power struggle with one person trying to hijack the conversation to what they're concerned about. So, for example, the partner had a concern about something that would happen. By using the dialogue tool, they would express their concern with no blame or no criticism. And then the partner, the healing partner, would just need to reflect back what they heard to make sure they're not misinterpreting it or putting a different spin on it. And then they need to validate why it makes sense that their partner would have that concern. Because that's a very connecting exercise when they do that. And you can't really problem solve until there's a good emotional connection. So using that tool is so effective, and I recommend to every couple that I work with that they learn how to use it, they practice it, and they use it whenever they're going into a conflict situation. And then there's some other conflict tools like having an agreement on a safe word or hitting the pause button, way to stop things if they start becoming difficult. But I think for the couple to have an agreement and share a process for handling the conflict is really important, and to have that for the rest of the relationship. I know in my marriage, I've been married 36 years, that we use the dialogue, and it's very, very effective. You know, we could have a disagreement about having too many books in the house or something like that. But if we use the dialogue process, it gets cleared up right away. So acquiring a lot of good communication skills and patterns is really important, and to work on that so that the partners are on the same page and they're clear and they understand each other better.
Mary, you are a world of knowledge. We've got to have you back on the show so we can talk some more about how to make partners safe and how to rebuild this relationship. Now, I want to remind everybody that you wrote a book called The Trust Solution, and it's actually a guidebook to help people to figure out what they can do to repair. The entire title is The Truth Solution, A Couple's Guide for Healing After Intimate Partner Betrayal. And where can they find your book? Where can they find your book, Mary?
Well, they could go to my website, maryfrons.com, or on Amazon as of March. It's coming out in March. And they can also follow me on Instagram, Dr. Mary Frons. And there's lots of tips pertaining to all the things I talked about on Instagram. And I hope that they will all take a look at the book when it comes out. And if they want to send me an email or direct message me on Instagram, I'll be happy to send them a chapter when it comes in, so that they can see the information in advance. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, Carol. I'd love to come back sometime.
Oh, excellent. And I appreciate the fact that you would give our listeners a gift of a chapter so they can get some information. And, of course, that's a teaser because they're going to want your book. So thank you so much. I'm going to get you rescheduled. And you just did a phenomenal job of explaining how partners and their spouses
can rebuild trust through the truth solution. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol. Have a wonderful day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Dr. Mary Franz. That's F-R-O-N-S. And you can Google her to get her website. Go to Instagram, sign up for that free chapter. And as always, we feel very blessed to be here for you. Don't forget it. You know, it's not like we make any money or anything, and I've got more clients than I have than I really should. But we have always made it our mission to educate you so that you'll know where to go when you've been through this crisis and what you need to do if you decide to stay and what you need to do if you decide to go. I'm Carol, the coach, here for APSATS.org. That's APSATS.org. We will see you next week for more Carol the Coach and
APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.